It is Saturday, May 30th, 2009, 10:06 a.m. on the central coast of California. Today on Geek Speak, geek news, and college kids that are making their an iPhone app and starting a business. Welcome to Geek Speak. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. Today, we're talking with two college kids that have started their own business, a new business, to make an iPhone app. Their website, collegekidapp.com, follows their progress, their process of learning, and what they're doing. It's kind of a fun engagement coming out of college, and I'm looking forward to what they do come down the line, and they're going to talk to us about us in the second half of the show. Also, in the second half of the show, you're welcome to call us with questions and comments. I'd love to stay on topic, but if you got something that you really need to ask us, you're welcome to do so. The phone numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Of course, you can go to geekspeak.org right now, participate in our forum, send us an email, and if you'd like to chat with us live during the show, we do that too. Just go to today's show page. On the left, there's a Geek Chat link. This is Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air and with me are geeks. Miles Elam, he's a slacker and political junkie.
Good morning.
And we have Ben Jaffe, a freelance media guy.
Hey, how's it going?
Freelance media guy means you take on business, right? You take on work. So if people want to contact you,
who wants
you can
to
do
hire
that.
Me?
Oh, wow. That was pretty blatant. But
oh,
I like
sorry,
it.
sorry. KUSP does
now,
not endorse. Yeah.
Also, you two have something else in common. You're both going to be teaching at Stanford this summer doing...
Yeah, we're both Stanford professors.
Yeah, well, we will be.
And you did this last year.
It's Stanford instructors.
Yeah, what group is it with? I can't remember.
Digital Media Academy.
Okay, so it's for kids.
Right? They do kids classes, teen classes, and adult classes. And we're teaching teen and kid classes.
Mm-hmm. And do kids really need to learn how to be a slacker? Or is that... What are you teaching?
Actually, that's self-learned, self-taught. But we'll be teaching game programming. That's
slacker autodidactic.
That's how you get kids interested in computer programming is, say, here's how you make a game.
So you'll be making games with them?
Yes.
Very cool. All right. Yeah. And the other thing you guys have in common, well, what, Ben? What are you going to be teaching? Go ahead.
What am I going to be? Yeah. Oh, no. I was just going to say it's kind of cool to teach kids game programming concepts like extensibility and everything, and they don't know that you're teaching them.
Because you're really showing them Mick Pac-Man.
Yeah. It's kind of a, you know,
you're sliding in.
Yeah. Exactly. Nice. Yeah.
And they might actually do some math.
You don't
too.
Say, this is going to be a great educational class, kids.
Right.
You know, you say, this is going to be awesome. We're going to make awesome video games. And
you use awesome as much as possible.
Awesome.
So the other thing that's awesome about you guys.
We have something else in common?
Yes.
Wait,
you both
we're
rode
sitting
bikes.
Next to each other, too.
You both have dark hair. It's amazing. You also both rode your bikes in today.
I have dark hair.
Now, you rode your bike from Berkeley and Miles from Ben Lomond, but both of you used buses on the way.
I didn't ride my bike from Berkeley.
You know what I mean?
I wish I could pretend to be that hardcore.
I unfortunately didn't. I just drove my
you rode your
slightly
car.
Broken car. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah,
I saw.
So why didn't you ride a bike?
Because I'm a lazy, fat bastard.
I saw you yesterday.
I don't know.
And your radiator was broken, right? And I asked you a question. I asked you, hey, Lyle. Are you changing?
You and I, like, toggled across Santa Cruz trying to get my new radiator, and you're on your bike, and I'm on the car. And you had to slow down for me.
Yeah.
Like, getting around Santa Cruz with the bike
is so
much better than
the car. You were going so slowly.
It's called traffic.
I know, but...
Okay, so yes,
I could have gotten there in half the time. I could have, like,
and what,
biked up to campus and then come back down.
And yesterday you asked me, is it hard to change a radiator?
Yeah, because you were going to do it yourself, right?
And I said... I don't know, but ask me tomorrow. So please.
And so Lyle, I have a question for you.
Yes, Ben.
Is it easy to replace a radiator?
Yes.
Really?
Yes. It actually wasn't that bad.
What kind of car do you have?
I have a Honda Civic. It's a 95, I think. That means it's made in 94, of course. And yeah, I just had to disconnect some hoses, unscrew some bolts. My hands got really dirty. And my
it's
hands
harder than...
Wait, your hands got dirty working on a car?
Yeah, you know, with computers, your hands will get dirty. You cut yourself on the metal flange and stuff, but
yeah,
dirty. My hands
are a mess
today.
Got all kinds of weird diseases and stuff.
But yeah, it's fine. The biggest problem is, the biggest thing is you've got to get something to catch all the fluid from. And after I pulled the radiator, I found out that it's got a little valve that I could have used, but instead I did it messy.
Oh, no.
And clamps and pipes, and I did it like 2 o'clock in the morning.
So is it harder than replacing, say, a laptop hard drive?
Yes. Well, not a MacBook. I would rather change a radiator in my car than open up this MacBook that I've got in front of me.
Okay. What about changing the RAM? RAM's easier?
A MacBook Pro? Yeah, RAM's easier. Is that any more analogies?
I'm just trying to...
Let me put it this way.
What about removing the uppercase and then putting it back on and just not doing anything else?
No. I think I'd probably still rather do the laptop because the laptop...
Really?
I think I'd probably rather do all the stuff on the laptop.
Wait, we're talking about MacBook
Pro.
Well,
MacBook Pro. This is riveting. This is truly riveting.
Moving on.
This is...
First news story. Ben... You were playing with a new search engine yesterday, too.
Yes, yeah, we were talking about that as well. It's called Wolfram Alpha, and you may have heard about it if you follow Tech News Cycle. It's been really big lately. There have been all of these stories about it, talking about how it's going to be a Google killer.
Yeah,
and
a whole bunch
I think
of fluff,
that that's,
you mean, that kind of thing?
Well, yeah, I think that that's just sensationalism. I mean, it's not going to be a Google killer because it doesn't try to do what Google does best.
Google
what
finds
Google does,
popular information.
Yeah, well, Google finds websites that have information. So you can do a Google search, and it'll return you a list of websites, and then you look. And this is oversimplifying, of course. They have other services, but Google's web search basically gives you a list of websites, and then you go into those websites, and you parse through those websites and find the information you're looking for.
And they have a few services that are different. Google does have like an image search where it shows you a whole bunch of images, which is a convenient way instead of going to each page to look for the image. And then it also does things like you can do general... calculations of like pounds, you know, find out what that actually means. And you can do mathematical stuff too.
Yes, that's true. But Wolfram Alpha really shines in getting certain kinds of information, pulling, like you can ask it questions and it's got this reference that it can pull certain kinds of information a lot better. Like I just searched Wolfram Alpha, is it easy to replace a radiator? Wolfram Alpha isn't sure what to do with my input, so I don't think it knows.
Right.
But if
I were to ask something like a scientific question or a mathematics question or a music question, like what notes are in a C-sharp major?
I could just tell you that.
But I don't know that, so could I ask?
C-sharp, F and G-sharp. But yeah. I mean, like...
so what happens
type,
if you
type,
like type,
type
that
type,
in?
Type, I typed in C-sharp major chord, and it... gave me a little picture of a keyboard display and with the notes, the proper notes selected, and music notation. So they're written on a
and it's on the search engine itself.
It actually gives you, that is what it gives you back. Also, I'm using Fluid as my web app, which is based on WebKit, but and it's not working with this particular feature, but apparently you can click on a link and it'll play the notes too. I don't know if it creates a MIDI file and triggers MIDI events or something. I'm not really sure, but
I think we've covered this kind of stuff before, these kind of search engines before, and the problem for me is it comes down, I guess if I start using it as a tool, it might work, but it's still hard to decide when that's going to work versus when Google's going to work. But Wikipedia now does that for me, right? If I really want to know about USB, I don't do a search on Google about USB stats. I look at Wikipedia.
Well, for example, my dad is coming to visit through San Jose International Airport, and so I just actually did a search on Wolfram Alpha. And normally, it just gave me the FAA code and the ICAO code, elevation, number of runways, longest runway length, and then also the current weather. And all the nearest airports. So it gives me a lot of information. And so it's kind of like I could get all that information through Google. I could get that information through Wikipedia. I could go to a weather site and get the current temperature.
Sure.
If I just kind of want a memory dump of everything about the San Jose airport, then that's a good way to do it. Also, it really excels. It's Wolfram Alpha. Wolfram is the company that makes Mathematica.
Right.
And that is an absolutely incredibly powerful tool. That does calculations and whatnot, creates graphs, and I just searched for log sine of x, and it gave me this whole graph with the real part and the imaginary part. All
cool. So it's a horrible name for a website.
Wolfram
Alpha, but it might be a fun search engine to use.
They have to get like wa.com or something.
Yeah. Good point. All right, let's move on. Thank you, Ben. Miles. Hey.
Recent advances in nanotechnology. We've talked about on the show before the issue of longevity in data storage. The fact that all of our media that's out there is not going to live that long. I mean, we have nothing on the scale of papyrus or stone tablets. And that's one of the things. I saw an analogy to that, which I thought very apt, which is it's like you have a bin and you're putting in strawberries. A couple of strawberries, no big deal. But the more strawberries you put in after a certain point, the faster it's going to rot.
Right? Okay.
So the more you try to cram it in, the worse, the more mushy it's going to get.
It is a good thing we don't eat strawberries.
Wait, if you put
storage,
in a right. whole bunch of strawberries, then the center will not rot very quickly. But I don't mean to, you know, stomp on your strawberry metaphor. Yeah.
You know, the problem with being a geek is when I said it's hard to use strawberries as a storage medium, I thought about the pattern of the seeds on the outside of the strawberry and thought, well, wait, that could be work. Okay, so what is the solution?
Thing.
Optics, and the reason why
so
we talk about...
So researchers at the Center for Microphotonics at the Swinburne University of Technology at Victoria, Australia, mm-hmm. have a material that they see as having 10,000 times the data density of an average DVD.
Wow.
And it's using nanotechnology, so you have a nanotube, and you have an iron element that will slide up and down that nanotube.
Okay.
And if it's on one end of the nanotube, it's a zero. If it's on the other end of the nanotube, it's a one.
Nice.
And this is from what they're describing. This is still in the lab. This is not released technology. But what they're describing is something that will have a longer longevity than stone, than a stone tablet. Like the wear rate is lower than that. Presumably if you're not scraping away at it at the time, obviously.
Right.
And better than paper, better than parchment.
So you're actually talking about a few atoms of iron being inside this tube.
Basically, yeah.
Interesting. Because it seems to me that when you're talking about that kind of scale, moving that up and down, don't you have quantum problems? I mean, if you're only talking about a few atoms of iron, that's a problem. But I guess the carbon nanotube is a lot larger than I'm thinking.
Yeah, and it is an iron particle. It's not just some atoms. You actually have a
right. I just always assumed a nanotube is diameter is in atoms distance. So you can't have that much iron in it. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
So potentially it's more, or it's a cluster of nanotubes that represent that node.
But nanotubes, they've found you can have conductivity within the tube, and you can have it as an insulator outside the tube.
Very
so.
Cool. Neat. All right. So it could be a new way of doing long-term storage.
Yeah,
of course,
the question would be
how fast would it be? Would it be like a tape drive, or could they do it in real time, and therefore would it replace hard drives, and we've got a really fun thing going on here.
Well, even if it doesn't, even if it is, if you're talking about something that's equivalent to the tape drives of yore, it's still a great thing that you can have something and not have to worry about, is this going to be okay in 5 years?
Right.
Is this going to be okay in 15 years?
Which what we do with DVDs. In fact, if you've got stuff on DVDs that's more than like 5 years old, start taking a look at it, make a new copy.
If you have a CD, like CDs. A CDR that you wrote 10 years ago, it may have already degraded somewhat.
Right. Pull it in your computer, copy the whole thing, make a new one.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a 5 year
You should
cycle,
always, if there's new technology, like for example, CDs were replaced by DVDs, DVDs replaced by dual layer, dual layer replaced by Blu-ray.
And Blu-rays replaced by... See, that's when we need cricket.
Yet.
That's when we need a cricket sound effect.
Cricket.
But the idea there is if you have media, if you have data in those older media, as soon as you get a drive of the newer media, transfer it all over.
Right.
So if you had a whole bunch of 1.44 floppies, they're probably useless at this point. But
if
you had 100 of those, put them onto a CD.
And then if you had 100 CDs.
If you had 6 CDs, put them onto a DVD. If you have 6 DVDs, you put them onto a Blu-ray.
Right. And that's really because those things, not only will the media itself degrade, the CD faster than the magnetic floppy, but the equipment to read it will become obsolete and hard to get access.
And you get faster access to that older data.
And the larger storage stuff, the smaller things aren't that much of a problem.
Although I do have to admit, there's some programming I did 10 years ago that I don't know if I want to see again.
Right. All right. Thanks, Miles.
Sometimes the history can be... painful.
Embarrassing. Yeah.
So, Ben, what's going on with particle physics?
I was just
going
to say, I've got a bunch of floppies that I have a bunch of stuff backed up on. I've been storing on my refrigerator with a magnet, and I think it's probably time I transfer those over.
All right. What's going on with particle physics, Ben?
The Large Hadron Collider, the end of the world black hole creator, right? No. Anyway, so I'm sorry. I don't mean to put fuel on
trolls.
The fire, but it's, exactly. I'm feeding the trolls. But no, anyway, so it's been undergoing repairs for ages and ages, because it was built a couple years ago and then it broke and sprung a leak and they've been completely out of commission for a long time. So anyway, they are scheduled to restart it. as in September of 2009, assuming they don't have any other problems.
Wait a second, because I heard that they couldn't run it during the winter because it's too expensive to run during the winter.
That's true. That's actually the reason, is because power costs more, because power is at more of a premium, because there's more of a demand for it. Exactly.
Right.
But they have not been running the LHC for all of this time, and therefore they haven't been spending any money running the LHC. So they've got this extra money that they're using that to justify the extra cost of the electricity to run it through part of or all of the winter.
That's great.
They want to get some data from certain experiments, and so they're going to start running it, and until they can get enough data, they're just going to keep running it.
Isn't it just going to drive up the energy cost for everyone who lives in the area?
It might.
Well, they'll probably have to buy from other places as well. Buy electricity, but
you know the. I went and saw the. What was that horrible movie? Gosh.
After Tomorrow. what?
Don't guess. It's okay. Angels and Demons. I wouldn't say it was horrible, but they used the LHC in the storyline to make
plot
like
device?
Antimatter. Yeah, and it was really the science of it was horrible. And it was just like...
Speaking of which, in a couple weeks, we're going to have a particle physicist on who knows all about this kind of stuff.
Good. So. We'll talk more about it then.
Indeed.
Let's talk a little bit about law. Miles, please.
Well, it's been in the news that Barack Obama was nominating Sonia Sotomayor as a Supreme Court justice. She'd be the third woman ever nominated to the court and the first Hispanic. And that's what's dominated the news. But what does it mean for geeks?
Yes. Much more important.
She is, in fact, the first Supreme Court nominee to have any cyber law in her record prior to her appointment to the High Court.
And when you say cyber law in her record, she, like, worked on...
She actually wrote opinions on cases that dealt with the internet having to do with computers and rights. For example, whether or not it violated the Fourth Amendment to search an employee's computer at the office to see if it had any information, damaging information.
So is her stance kind of in line with your political views, Miles?
Actually, there's not enough information there to be able to say what her political bent is going to be, per se. But it does say that she's come across the issues before, that she's not...
She's
whereas
not totally
the other justices, you have no idea. It's a complete blank slate. You have no idea whether they're a complete... going off of left field or not.
Well, and we see this kind of stuff when we see really horrible legislation coming around about, computer usage and getting a fine and getting criminal sentence if you're using someone's Wi-Fi outside of their space. Mm-hmm. And just the general lack of knowledge about how technology works of creating bad legislation. And I would assume for judges it's going to be the same thing. If they don't know what the actual world is of high tech, how can they judge it?
Right. One of the items in there was whether or not pressing a button on a website was the equivalent of signing on or assenting to a contract.
Oh, right. Perfect example.
And the ruling in this particular one was it could be, but not in that case, because it wasn't made clear to the person by clicking on the button, you are agreeing to that contract.
Right.
You have to make it explicitly clear. And so I would agree with that one, but I don't know what the larger ramifications are for that opinion.
All right, great. Thank you very much, Miles, for keeping us up to date on that. Some space news or some crazy robot stories? I'm up for either, but we don't have Al here this week, so I feel like we should do some robot stories.
Robot stories. That's true. I've been having a little bit of trouble finding information on this crazy robot, but I saw a picture of it, and I'm committed, so I'll just tell you what I know.
You know about Photoshop, right?
This is a real robot. Okay. I'm sorry. But
what are you talking about? Robots aren't real.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay. The cricket sound again.
The reason I'm having trouble finding information on this is because I'm actually reading this news article that was translated from Japanese. But this is this crazy, crazy robot that can lift...
Terminator. Yeah. Or at least wannabe.
Okay. This thing looks like it wants to kill you. No, really, it's
okay, did you put a link up on this on the
website?
It's so
intense. It will be up there very soon.
Okay, good.
Well, that's reassuring. I always want a robot to look like it's about to kill me. Woohoo!
It's 6 feet wide.
From any perspective, any robot looks like it wants to. If you ever seen a Roomba going through a room, if you lay down, you feel like you're going to die.
Oh my God, I saw this awesome hack. Someone put a whole grid of LEDs on top of this Roomba and set it up to make it look like Pac-Man and turn off the lights.
Nice.
And so it was running around, it was walking, or what rolling, it was rolling around. It was, I don't know, sucking on the floor.
You said running around, you totally have
anthropomorphized it. Yeah. But this robot is just freaky. It's got, okay, so just really briefly, it's got three CCTV cameras so it can see you. It's got two arms that can lift, I'm doing this from memory, it's something like 220 pounds or something. It's definitely enough to pick up
a person.
A person, yes.
And crush them and throw them against the wall.
I mean, if these arms can pick up 220 pounds, that's terrifying.
So what's that in real units?
Like, it's like they, what?
What's that in real units?
Yeah, what's all this?
It also says that the robot's weight is 2.7 T. What is T?
Tons?
Yes. I've never heard it abbreviated.
Moving
Wait,
up.
Are these metric sound. Tons? I mean...
No, that would be MT, I would assume.
Well, it's translated from Japanese, so would it be...
It probably is. Well, it depends on the person writing the article.
Means 2,500 kilograms.
Why
do
you ask Wolf from Alpha to tell you what a ton is? Yeah. A metric ton. Come on, man.
Can I ask Wolf from Alpha questions such as, will this robot be the one... That destroys
when
all
Wolf
of humanity.
From Alpha says yes, go to the hills. All right, we got time for one more news story before we do this mid-break thing. And Miles, I got to know what the whole Obama green thing is.
Okay, well, Obama was criticized on the campaign trail for saying that we should inflate our tires, but it turned out to be correct. It was a little thing that we could do to improve gas mileage and therefore lower our oil.
The general idea is that if the entire nation made their tire pressure correct, we could save a lot of fuel.
Right.
Okay.
Well, a similar thing has come up from his Secretary of Energy. And so basically, Professor Stephen Chu, the U.S. Energy Secretary, has said that we should paint our roofs white instead
okay.
of dark.
Does he have shares in DuPont? I mean, where's all this paint going to come from?
Right. But the idea is that it's going to increase the albedo of the surface of the planet. Or the surface where there is where are people living.
Mm-hmm.
A similar thing could probably come from
the what albedo?
The albedo.
Never heard that.
This is used with meteorology.
Okay.
Sorry, I took a class in meteorology recently. So that's the reflection going off the planet back into back up. So back into space. The idea is that the heat in the planet is not directly from the sun. The sun is very hot and has a high frequency for that thermal energy, and that goes right through the atmosphere. It's not kept. And it heats up the ground.
This is the ultraviolet light.
Right. And as the ground heats up, it's a lower temperature than the sun, and it's a lower frequency than...
Right. We're talking about infrared.
Infrared.
It becomes infrared, basically.
And that is trapped
by... We're simplifying
this,
by the way, but that's okay. Go on.
But that is trapped by the CO2 in the air.
Because the lower frequency actually doesn't pass through the CO2 layers that we've got.
Right. However, that ultraviolet that comes from the sun, that high frequency that is reflected back out, is not absorbed by the atmosphere.
It still goes through, just like the sun.
Most of it is not. Anyway.
Right, right.
And so if you make the surface of the planet more reflective, in other words, a light color, it's going to reflect more of that energy away before it can be trapped by greenhouse gases.
Fantastic. Now, and the point about the heat thing is the reason why dark things are dark is because the light is not bouncing back, right? It's actually hitting
it's
the material,
absorbing
being absorbed,
it and
turned
converting
into energy.
Thermal heat, yeah.
Thermal heat. Okay, and one other thing, the reason why your car heats up is the exact same process. The ultraviolet light comes from the sun. It hits something in the car, warms that up, and then the infrared can't go back through the glass.
Right.
And so if you have reflective screen, like most people do for like long-term parking, you put that up, the reflective energy goes right back out, and that's why the car doesn't heat up.
And if you don't want your car to be so hot when you come back to it, get a white car with a light interior.
Yeah, now the light interior is actually more important for the heat up than the dark versus light car.
That's true.
The actual material, the steel on the outside, if it's dark, is heating up. It's actually outside of the cavity of the car. And it doesn't
in
heat
fact,
up as much.
The car is a microcosm for the Earth.
It is.
In that you have that high-frequency light.
Wait, you guys can't talk about that. You don't even have cars.
the high-frequency light is going through the glass, unfettered, heating up the interior of the car. And the interior car, that low-frequency heat, is being caught by the glass.
Okay, so we're repeating ourselves. No,
yeah,
Ben, you
want
to say that?
That's an exact direct analogy from the glass to the atmosphere and the interior of your car interior to the ground. on the earth.
You're going to drive away in your car, and it'll be nice and hot inside, and we're going to ride on our bikes, and they're not going to be hot. Well, I guess that's partially because we park them inside the station.
You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KSP. This is Geek Speak. My name's Lyle Troxell. The geeks today are Ben Jaffe and Miles Elam. Let's invite our guest, Cameron Banga and Mike Phelps. Hi, Cameron and Mike. Welcome to Geek Speak.
Hey, how's it going?
Thanks for joining us today. So, Cameron, what university are you going to?
Valparaiso University in Northwest Indiana.
Okay, and you're doing the marketing for collegekidapp.com. And then, Mike, you are the lead developer for the applications, correct?
Yeah, that is correct.
And what's your history in university? Are you you're a mathematics and engineering major?
Yeah, I'm a mechanical engineering major at Valpo.
So why is a mechanical engineering major and a marketing and an economics major starting an iPhone app business?
That's a really great question, one we wish we could answer ourselves. No, it's something, you know, we've kind of been talking about for a while. We have our third member of our team, Jeff Lang, and him and I are two guys who work together at a radio station, college radio station. We're always bouncing ideas off each other. And we thought, you know, hey, let's make a website. Let's do something like that. And summer came along, and we were still looking for a good summer job. We had some offers, but nothing that great. Mike, sadly enough, was kind of lost an internship that he really wanted. So we were all sitting there thinking, well, what are we going to do with our summers? And we thought, well, why would we make an iPhone app? We see tons of people making money off of it. You know, recently you see in the news all the time of these guys who are working in their basements and making a huge project. So we figured, why not us? We can do it. You know, we have some experience. There's no reason we can't do it and see as much success as they've had.
Mike, are you a programmer?
I've had a little experience in programming. Uh-huh. As a mechanical engineer at Valpo, we do a lot of programming in a MATLAB, which is kind of like a computer. It's a computer programming generally for engineers or other science majors. It's real basic stuff.
I wouldn't say MATLAB is basic, but I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
So you're in from a programming perspective, it's a light programming. It's like support programming stuff to do the mathematics or to do the mechanical engineering stuff you need to do. So you guys don't really have programming experience at a high level. And how is the learning curve for doing an iPhone app?
I definitely think there's a really big learning curve, but there's a lot of utilities that you can take advantage of. Apple.com has a lot of
training sessions and things of that nature.
Yeah. And we've also taken advantage of the iStanford,
the college class that they have online right now that they did where they made an iPhone app and they put the whole thing up pretty much to podcasts and that kind of thing. It's been amazing. Nice.
Now, when iPhone apps came out first run, the people that really jumped on the early space and got popular got to a point where they, you know, that's all they had to do. The finances were so good that they could make a killing off of a simple application. I don't know if that's still the case. Cameron, what's your experience now with whether you can get like a return on investment on producing an iPhone app?
You know, that was a huge question for us when we started off, because obviously we're going to take, for us, the next 3 months or so. We started a couple weeks ago, about 2-3 weeks ago, we started working on this heavy, and then we're planning on going right now until mid-August or late August. So one of the questions was, there was a lot of success with this at launch, you know, last summer and that kind of stuff. But is there still money there now for us? Because if we're putting in 3 months of time, hopefully, the goal is hopefully to make, you know, a couple dollars for all our work, you know, in the long run. The one thing we've noticed is that, making the application itself was not something we were too worried about. I know, obviously, we don't have a whole lot of program experience, but just reading a lot of accounts online and looking at what the process was, talking together as a team, we said, you know, this is something, given the time we have, we can definitely do. Making an application itself is not going to be an impossible task. So that was one thing that was, you know, obviously something very comforting going into the project. But the second thing was, well, how do we make money on this? Because if you've seen the commercials or something like that, you know, I think there's 40,000 applications out for the iPhone right now. And with WWDC coming up here in the next couple weeks, and, you know, they're going to have iPhone 3.0 software coming out, you're assuming there's going to be a whole lot more software coming out as well. Obviously, there's a huge market and a lot of applications. Where do we fit into our piece of the pie? And we think that, you know, where we were trying to position ourselves in the market was, we have kind of unique experience here because we're three college kids. We're documenting the whole thing on our website, collegekidapp.com, and we're trying to be open and let people see the whole process. You know, as an example, like last week, we did our first marketing effort. We went on Facebook, put up ads, and I documented the whole process and said, hey, here's how you go about putting ads on Facebook. Here's what we're seeing through this process. You know, if you want to do this kind of thing, you know, like we're doing, you need to know about this as well. You know, obviously learning the Objective-C, learning the programming stuff in Cocoa, and stuff like that is important, but you need to know how to run a business as well. So we're marketing ourselves as, hey, we're going to show you that part of it. You know, check out our app as well. And hopefully through the aid we're giving people or kind of through our experience, it'll be worthwhile. And, you know, I think we've got application ideas that could sell, obviously, but, you know, I mean, everyone thinks that when they go into the store. So we're trying to market ourselves as the kids who are kind of the underdogs, kind of putting in our whole effort and hoping that, you know, we'll get lucky and hopefully people will find interest in what we're doing and the documentation we're putting out on our end and what it's like to whole start the business and run it as an iPhone developer.
Do you see this as something that you're going to continue doing after the summer, or do you see it just as a summer project? Like, what's the scope of this?
Well, when we started off, like I said, we started, this kind of went back as far as last fall when Jeff and I were talking about like neat little websites we could make and that kind of thing. We'd have discussions almost nightly about what we could do. And it was something we always wanted to work on a project together, and it was just the timing wasn't right. Our schedules weren't working out. So the summer was a great 3-month period of time where we didn't have anything to do. So we could sit here, you know, I mean, our only cost is really our time, you know, and we're college kids. So what are we going to work, you know, an 8-hour job or something like that? Like,
yeah, but this takes into your drinking time though, doesn't it?
Yeah. We do take weekends off, except for today. Today we're working a full day. But other than that, usually, you know, we do what we can to have fun in the summer as well. But
and it's really right now, it's a summer program because, I mean, you're a junior, Cameron. Mike, are you as well?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you guys are definitely going back to school. Yeah.
Yeah. The goal is we'll be going here now through, you know, we start, I think, the 20th or so, 27th of August. So we'll be going through then and kind of seeing where we get. I mean, we think we can get 2 or 3 applications in the store by that time. And so, then judging off our success there, we'll see if we can move into the future. Obviously, we'd like to keep doing this. If we find that there's success there and we can keep sustaining it with the school schedule, we'll keep doing it next fall as well.
I'm going to invite people to call in with suggestions on iPhone apps. And I know you guys can ignore them completely, but I think it would be kind of a fun thing to do. If you had a crazy idea for an iPhone app or you want a suggestion about that, talk about that a bit. You're welcome to call us up right now in the 831 area code. The phone number is 476-2800. Again, that's 476-2800. Or toll free anywhere in the continental U.S., 1-800-655-5877. Again, that's 1-800-655-5877. My guests today, Cameron Banga and Mike Phelps from collegekidapp.com. You guys are in Chicago. And also, of course, Ben Jaffe, Miles Elam, and I'm Lyle Troxell. And I just want to let a caller called in saying that we got the story wrong about the weather and
the LHC
electricity.
And LHC. Switzerland and the electricity rates.
Yes, the electricity rates, saying that, no, the high peak electricity rates is in the summer because that's when everybody runs air conditioning. In Switzerland, not the case.
It's cold in Switzerland.
It's cold and there's no air conditioning. So over there, it's wintertime is the time. In any case,
also, yeah, it's always easier to cool things down than it is to heat them.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Well, I don't know about that.
I mean, from
I think,
an energy
I think my
perspective,
broken
right,
hands
maybe?
From my radiator last night would argue with you. Cooling is difficult.
Well, actually, never mind. I'll take that comment back because it was a gross generalization.
It's actually, from electricity, it's a lot easier to warm things up than to
cool things down. That's what I was talking about. Because a refrigerator, you're heating up the back of the refrigerator to cool off the inside of the refrigerator.
Yeah.
So if you're,
so why are houses made such that the refrigerator...
If
cooling
you're stuck,
heating elements out in the room, it should be outside the building.
It's completely off topic, but if you're stuck
really?
In an insulated room and you have a refrigerator, don't plug it in because it's going to have a net heating effect. Because
right.
you're, it, okay, anyway, but what I was going to say about iPhone's apps is it's really interesting to me. It's just another example of how sometimes the technical implementation can be really, really good, but the app can be bad, or the technical implementation can be really simple, but the app can be really, really good. And it's not so much about how good you are at programming necessarily. It's about the idea and your ability to implement that idea.
Design.
I mean, especially from a profitability standpoint, you know, that iPhone app that just farts. Yeah, I mean,
that
everyone bought that. That
right,
cost
right.
a dollar, right. and everyone bought that, and they've made tons.
I actually have a question for our guests with regard to iPhone development. I saw a stat recently that was saying the top paid apps had for the UK and for the US. For the UK, it was World Factbook. For mm-hmm. the US, it was the Moron Test. How can you predict what's your guide there for, you know, how to navigate this world?
You know that's a good question, because when we were sitting here, I would say early May, when we were kind of making decision, are we going to jump into the pool and do this, or are we going to kind of back off and, you know, not go along with it? We were looking at the top, you know, applications, top 100 applications, and kind of going one by one, which of these could we make technically? You know, like which ones of these would be capable for us? And
sure.
I think at that point, I think the number one or two paid app was this thing called 3000 Facts, which was just where you shake the iPhone and it gives you a new fact. So the guy went online, found, you know, 3000 facts here and there, and then programmed something that you just shake it and it changes the, you know, the fact. We're like, well, we could do that in 25 minutes. I mean, obviously, there's more time to it than 25 minutes. That's an exaggeration. But at the end of it, we were just like, well, we could do these kind of things. So it's kind of, I guess, a lottery there where, you know, like you said, you can have a really great technologically advanced product, you know, really great programming, and it won't sell because there's just no one catches on with it. And you can have something that's very simple, such as the farting application or this thing where you shake it and there's 3,000 you know, 3,000 facts. And that might take, you know, a couple of days to program, test, and make sure it's good to go, and it won't be a problem at all with one guy. And that'll sell, you know, $200,000-$300,000 worth of product. So it's kind of a lottery, okay. And that's we're going to target ourselves as these guys who are not necessarily the underdogs, but these three kids who don't really know what they're doing. We're going to work really hard at it for 3 months and hope that that kind of, I guess, pays off and that people notice that and see it and that people would say, hey, these are kids who are really trying. They're putting a lot of effort into it. And we think the applications we have, you know, are kind of in that ladder where there are things that are needed. They're not necessarily the hardest thing to code, but they're things that people would benefit from. So if they see that our separation of everyone else is the fact that, you know, we're teaching ourselves and we're documenting it, then maybe that'll get us a couple more downloads, get us on the top 100 and that kind of thing.
Okay. What are some of the ideas of phones that you want to do?
Well, let's see. One of the things we're looking to do is when we started this, everyone asks us this kind of question and we can go on for hours. The thing is, when we started up, we were like, what apps can we do? So we have a list of like 30 to 40 apps, which I'm sure everyone in their mind has 30 to 40 apps they could make. You know, when you've used the iPhone for 10 minutes, especially with the application store, you can say to yourself, oh, I want this app or I want that app. So we have a huge list. Some of the things we're really looking to do is we've been contacted actually really early on by a couple people who have kind of like books that they would like to see published in an ebook fashion. That's one thing we are working on is kind of an ebook reader, kind of our own little software there that we could work on with that. Because mm-hmm. we've actually seen quite a bit of demand on it. Obviously, it's not the most glorious application that you can develop. You know, I mean, it's not something unbelievably amazing, but you know, we've seen a lot of demand actually for that from a couple people who've been saying, yeah, I have this small book that is self-published or that kind of thing. How do I go about getting it on the iPhone? You know,
I see. So actually selling books as an app. So you sell an app for $1 and actually it's really the book that you're buying.
Yeah,
that's been a pretty common way of doing app store stuff.
Yeah, and then from our business standpoint, we would be working for them, and then they would kind of, you know what I mean, we would get something up front and then do it for them. Because for us, it's kind of guaranteed income. You know, like we talk about, when you go to the app store, when you commit yourself to that application, you might spend a week developing it. I mean, if you're a company like Sega or Electronic Arts, you know, you're putting together these games like Super Monkey Ball, new Tiger Woods game. I mean, you know, that took a lot of man hours.
Yeah, it did.
A lot of money. Who knows how that's going to sell? Obviously, there's a huge cost, and you know, they're good games, so they're probably going to sell, but they might not.
You know, I guess one of the things that concerns me about diving into this to make money is that when I start thinking about iPhone apps, pretty quickly I realize that it's already there. Like, for example, early in the show, I wanted a cricket sound, and actually, I already have, you know, a cricket sound on my iPhone, and actually, it's a thing that can do rim shots, and you know, and it was free, right? Oh yeah, the rim shots like this, right? And that was something that's sitting on my iPhone all the time, and it didn't cost anything. They're doing advertising based. And I'm just thinking, like, when you think of something, does it have to be unique? Or are you hoping to be the one that people pick because your branding is better, your marketing, your story is more interesting?
Yeah, again, that's something when we spent time, you know, sitting in business development and marketing, that's a huge question. You know, we have, like I said, we talked about the ebook, and that was a good market for us because it's something where we work for somebody who's looking to get their work published, you know, be it whether they want to give the app away for free or if they want to try to sell it a dollar and do their own work that way. You know, for us, it's less of a gamble that way. You know what I mean? We can go in there, develop an application for them and go about doing it that way. You know, we've also talked with a couple of local businesses on getting just basic applications together that have maybe their menu and, you know, if they're a restaurant or something like that, their basic services, their contact information, which would be, you know, simple to develop, and then they could go give those away for free or kind of advertise it themselves that way.
Right. So more like custom applications.
Yeah, that's where we're seeing. I mean, right now, I think that's kind of the safe bet, at least for developers like us.
Yeah,
the smaller
guys.
Because,
well, go ahead, Cameron.
No, we're self-funded. We got to get something where we can make money. So for us, it's kind of hard to say, hey, we're going to commit 2 months worth of time and product to get something that might not have a return.
The other thing I see as a benefit for you guys is possibly not even being involved in the iPhone app. I mean, the experience of logging using the social networking tools that you're using, figuring out how to do Facebook advertising, and figuring out how to use Twitter effectively. All those things have a high demand for traditional businesses that aren't in that space. So I could see a traditional business hiring you guys right afterwards to kind of bump up their online marketing space.
You know, that's something obviously we've seen a lot of demand on as well. Like I said, we've only been around talking about this for about a month or two, but something we've already kind of, we're building the framework for right now is doing local consulting to businesses, because it's something that, exactly, we're doing this work, we're doing the Facebook marketing, we're doing, you know, Twitter and that kind of stuff, and basically doing our web development and stuff ourselves, and there's a lot of people who are seeing that as a huge skill. So not only are we building an app, and obviously that's our huge goal, and if we can get something out and see what income, you know, why is that way. we're hoping to also develop a small consulting service where we can go locally and say, hey, here's how you can use Twitter effectively. Here's how you use Facebook to market yourself. Here's how you do ads on Facebook. Here's how you use something like Google Analytics, which a lot of people don't even know about, but gives them a lot of value to their website that they didn't have previously. So that's the kind of things also we're looking to build upon and maybe make ourselves a little bit more multifaceted and not just sell applications, but also give a lot of services to people as well.
This is Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxler. You're listening to KOSP, Central Coast Public Radio. KOSP. In the air, and with me, I have geeks Miles Elam and Ben Jaffe. Answering the phones today, we are lucky to have Charlie. He's the producer of Dr. Dawn, which comes on before us, which means he's sitting by waiting for you guys to call up and ask us questions. You can ask us anything you'd like. The phone numbers are 476-2800. Again, 476-2800. Toll free at 1-800-655-5877. Again, that's 1-800-655-5877. Guests today are the guys from collegekidapp.com. They're logging their experience in starting up a small company to create iPhone application over the summer between their junior and senior years. It's Cameron Banga and Mike Phelps. We welcome you to ask questions about iPhone development, about being in that space of figuring out what you're going to do out of college, or about anything you'd like regarding technology. We can answer any question you can come up with. Maybe not correctly, but we can definitely answer it. The phone numbers are 476-2800, toll free at 1-800-655-5877. Mike, when you're doing this development and you're doing all the tools, all the tools are free, but when you actually guys want to put an app on the store, you do have to become a developer through Apple and spend $100, something like that. You guys already done that process?
Actually, we're in the process of doing that right now. We wanted to register as a company for the $100, and you have to prove to Apple that you're actually like a company.
Right.
You have to send them – they give you a list of about 7 forms, DBA form.
Right. So you're still starting all that stuff up. Sure.
Yeah, and I just faxed them our business name as form yesterday, so I'm waiting to hear back from them again.
And, of course, blogging that on your site.
We kept the whole process online as well. So we put the whole part of the form online and went through the whole process of what we did to register a business as well. So that's another part of what we're doing.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and take a call today from Aptos Arc. Welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good, good. What's your question today?
Well, I'm sorry it's not about iPhone apps, but I was interested in the Stephen Chu comment about white roofs.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm not mistaken, isn't it UV that causes the breakdown of the ozone layer?
Yeah, it's definitely – well –
Wait,
isn't it
hydrochlorofluorocarbons and CFCs?
I mean, yeah, UV interacting with CFCs and things like that.
So what happens
if we start reflecting all this extra UV back into the atmosphere to the ozone layer?
As compared to the global...
That's
a really good question. I wonder if there are enough CFCs and HCFCs still up there to...
Those levels are steadily dropping, though.
They are, because they were banned back in the, what decade was that? I don't remember.
Yeah,
90s,
yeah.
I believe.
But, I mean, we see the holes still getting fairly large down over the South Pole. I don't know. Maybe the ozone layer is really thick around the rest of the planet where it's warm and we don't have to worry about it so much. But it's just
an
interesting thing.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
So, anyway, like I say, sorry it wasn't an iPhone.
And that's actually another good point, Ark, is that you've got an issue of put white paint on, but make sure it's white in the ultraviolet range too.
Oh, good point. So it's got to be reflective in the right spectrum.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, the idea is also getting roof materials, because people are replacing their roofs every, 10 years, 15 years, that you start getting materials that are light in color to begin with, not necessarily taking a can of paint up to your roof and dumping it on there.
Yeah, something tells me it wouldn't stick to your shingles all that well anyway. So.
Right. Thank you so much for the call.
All right, guys. Good job with the show.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks. Bye-bye. As a side note, I actually didn't put in the punchline to that story, which was if you did make all the roofs white and you made the pavement more of a concrete color, then it would be the equivalent of taking all the cars in the world off the road for 11 years. That's how big a number we're talking about.
How's that the punchline? It's 11 years worth of car usage if we paint all of our roads.
Of CO2 emissions. Yeah.
Of our roads and our roofs white.
Oh. Or I mean of heat due to CO2 emissions. But
are we talking about reductions from painting the roofs and the results of that over 100 years or over a billion years
or over one year? But wait a second. Is that all the roofs and all the streets? All the pavements? And,
So
we'd have to start mixing dyes into concrete. Not feasible, but it's interesting.
Well, not into concrete, into asphalt. Concrete's already pretty good.
Yeah, that's true. Thank you.
I wonder what kind of environmental impact that would have of the actual paint. I mean,
Paint
is not
when we say paint white, we're actually talking about make the new materials that we're going to be putting on new roofs.
Oh, yeah, good point. Okay. Right.
Or instead of using asphalt, using concrete, especially in places like California where you don't have a freezing effect, which causes the cracks, which is why you can't use it in the northern state.
Well, I saw that news story a couple days ago, and I actually just painted my...
You painted your hat?
I already painted my roof white, and I probably...
You are a liar.
No, I rent. I can't paint my roof white.
We're taking calls with questions and comments about technology. The phone numbers are 476-2800, toll-free 1-800-655-5877. Miles, you've done some iPhone app development. I at least saw you do a couple of the test things. Mm-hmm. Are you still doing it?
When I have time. School has taken up a bunch of my time. It's funny, free upper division lit classes, there's a little bit of reading to do. but yeah, it's very interesting from a programmatic standpoint, because I wasn't a Big Mac developer. I wasn't familiar with DevStudio, or I'm sorry,
DevStudio. That's a Microsoft product.
Yeah, thank you. with Xcode. And with that environment. But it is really odd having that UI... being able to drag and drop and make that UI and then hook it into your logic.
Yeah.
That is, it's a different motif than I'm used to.
Okay, Mike and Cameron, what's the app that's maybe too complicated to build but you would love?
Oh, man, that's a good one. We've had a lot of these. Mike's the best one with coming up with, like, ideas, and then we kind of got to, like, shoot them down and be like, Mike, maybe that's a little ambitious. What was the one you had? You had one about, like, mapping out all this... public transportation systems in the U.S. like ourselves and mapping it, and I was like, that'd be a little bit ambitious there, Mike. Or doesn't what
the,
other ones?
Well, but doesn't the Google app already do that?
I don't know if they do it through their website. I know, like, if you go online to Google,
iPhone and in the Maps app,
like the actual, like, buses and trains and stuff.
Yeah,
in our area. Yeah, because Apple's over the hill from us, so I guess they do it, or Google's too.
No, they do it more than just our area.
It's, they do.
It's public,
they do.
Most public transportation.
Yeah. Yeah,
it, it's but we're talking. Because I thought it was like per city or region. Like, they have one maybe for like the city Chicago, but not for like all the major cities.
I think the way it works is they contact a bunch of metro departments and Caltrain and all of those public transit people who run the public transit, and I think I'm just guessing, but from what I can tell, it seems like they just contact them and they say, hey, if you submit all of your routes to us in this particular format that our program can parse, then we'll include it into Google search results. And I actually use that every week to come down from Berkeley down to Santa Cruz for Geekspeak, and type in the time that I want to get to Santa Cruz. It'll tell me what time to leave. It'll give me alternate routes using Caltrain or using VTA buses.
Yeah, so what we're talking about right now is like I just did it on the iPhone. I went search to my house to how to get there from the station, which is downtown. I live up in Felton. And up across the top, once I do it, it says it'll take me 20 minutes with traffic. It's 8.4 miles, and that's via car. And then there's a bus icon. I can click on that too, and it'll tell me how long it'll take by bus. It's going to cost $3, and it's going to take – I have to depart in 7 minutes. They're not telling me the actual ETA. And then if I walk, it's going to take about 2 hours and 46 minutes to walk there. And that's kind of cool that the app tells you how to do things. And, of course, the bus traffic, the bus schedule actually tells you what bus to get on and where to get on.
But this does bring up an interesting point. What happens, for example, that guy who had the 3,000 facts, you shake your phone to do that. There's nothing really stopping another person to say, well, I'm going to compile my own facts and make my own little 3,000 facts. And that's what happens. I mean, there's something like 1,000 different flashlight apps on the iPhone. So
they have thousands of them.
Yeah. So what's your strategy there for if you have that idea and you do put out that app so that you can have some sense of uniqueness, some sense of
Cameron?
That's great for us. We've had a lot of like internal debate with that one because we have one idea which we think is really, really good, and it's kind of like a utility application for the phone that we did a lot of research on. I think I actually had it when I was like sleeping and I woke up and I was like, oh my goodness, that'd be a great idea. Like, I woke up and I called Jeff about it, I think at like 2 a.m. and we've tried to be really transparent. That's our problem, is that was our big goal, is we're going to tell everyone about everything we're doing and we want to make sure that people can follow it. And then we're like, well, maybe second guess ourselves here with this one, and we're
right.
And
keep
we're
that one private.
So like yesterday we did this thing where for like 2 hours we worked on coding to get, like, we're building an application that's kind of just like an info page. It links to information about our website so that we can put it as like a free app and kind of just do it as a proof of concept and show people, hey, here, here's our stuff and here's what we've done, and show what the process is behind building that application. And then, you know, kind of let them see that and then hope that other applications be the same. So we have this one idea we think is really good. But we're kind of like, well, we're going to keep that one under tight lips for now, because like you said, it's easy to develop for. And obviously we're learning the whole process as we go. So we're taking a little longer than everyone else is, you know, obviously who's been developing for a year on this thing.
Mm-hmm.
So we're kind of like, well, we'll keep this idea in, you know, back in the garage for a while once we release that one. And then, but then, the, you know, the other interesting fact is, well, you can do that till you release the application, right? And then once you have it out there, everyone can...
Yeah, everyone can copy it. And if it's a simple application, it's not that not long until someone copies it.
So,
but it does make sense that a lot of the business then is being unique and interesting and cool. Of course, design. I hope you guys have a designer as well.
Yeah, we have – Jeff does a lot of our design work. He's our guy who's pretty good at Photoshop and laying out UIs and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, because that part is crucial. You have to distinguish yourself. And I get that showing yourselves as a company of college kids is a great way to say right off the bat, you know, play with us. We're the cool kids. So I wish you a lot of luck. And I'm looking forward to seeing what kind of apps you develop. I'll definitely purchase them and try them out. And thank you so much for being on GeekSpeak today.
Oh, thanks for having us. You know, thanks for checking us out. And we can't wait to see what we have here in a couple months as well. So we'll see. It's going to be a fun ride nonetheless.
Cameron Banga and Mike Phelps are the guys from collegekidapp.com. They're logging their experience starting up a little business and producing an iPhone application. I'm looking forward to following them. Thanks so much for being on the show. And we'll see you around.
See you guys later. Thanks for having us. Thank you.
GeekSpeak on KOSP is supported by Great Infusions Coffee Beanery and Espresso Machinery Showroom, offering artisan coffees, coffee makers, and specializing home espresso machines, parts, and repairs. Located at 317 Potrero Street on the corner of River Street in Santa Cruz County, in Santa Cruz, actually, or online at greatinfusions.com. GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of Online Tonight with David Lawrence and is used with permission. We got to get David on the show and talk about heroes.
That would be good.
David Lawrence is actually, he owns GeekSpeak trademark. He's been a great guy, supported the show, and he's also the puppet master villain on Heroes. So we're going to have him on to talk about that pretty soon. GeekSpeak on KOSP is supported by Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. The Geeks Today with Ben Jaffe and Al Luck, no, not Al Luck, Miles Elam. I'm Lyle Troxell. Answering the phones today was Charlie Mansky, and Charlie is the producer of Dr. Don. Charlie, thanks so much for being there for us. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP Santa Cruz, KBDH San Auto, or on the web at kosp.org. Now, we don't have Al here today for a goofy USB device. Ben, can you fill in for him?
Yeah, I miss Al, but okay. I found an air humidifier, a USB air humidifier.
Now, is it controlling the air humidifier via USB?
I don't think so. It's just powered, but I think it's a really bad idea to put an air humidifier right next to your computer. I think that's an awful idea.
Let's inject moisture into the computer.
Yeah, exactly.
I love
and then
the idea.
It also has like it does negative ions and whatever.
Yeah,
so.
Baloney. Coming up next is Car Talk for KOSP and GeekSpeak. I'm Lyle Troxell. Stay tuned.